Welcome, and thank you for standing by. I would like to remind all parties that your lines have been placed on listen-only until the question-and-answer portion of today's conference. At that time, if you're wishing to ask a question, please press star one on your touch-tone phone, and please be sure your telephone is unmuted and clearly record your name at the prompt so that your question may be introduced. Today's conference is being recorded. If you should have any objection, you may disconnect at this time. It is now my pleasure to turn the call over to Assistant Secretary Joseph Main. Thank you, sir. You may begin.
Thank you very much, and I want to thank everyone for taking the time out of your busy schedules to join us today. This is a opportunity for EFSCA to let folks know in the training community what we're doing that could be helpful to them, and to also use this venue to get comments and recommendations back from those who train up our nation's minors. This is our third polling call since we began this back in May of this year. And we're holding these conference calls, too, in a way to really provide information that we think is of great importance to get out to the training community. You are the backbone of our trainers. You are the ones that have miners, mining management folks, mine operators in the training rooms to really train them up on the things that they need to know to prevent injuries, illnesses, and fatals in the workplace. To that end, you're a critical part of all of our missions to carry out a health and safety improvement in health and safety in the nation's minds. So what I would like to do today is sort of walk through what the presentation is going to be and let you know how you can keep up with us. First, if you will go to the EFSCA homepage, and if you would go to the top left part of our homepage under the What's New, and you click that first item, which is material for the training call, you're going to find most of the material that we're going to be using for today's presentations. The first presentation that you're going to find is a PowerPoint on the update on the mining desks that we've had this last quarter of this year. We sent all this information out to stakeholders recently, but this is a PowerPoint that we're going to use to walk through what occurred and a brief summary of best practices to prevent those. The second PowerPoint is going to be on the metal mining deaths that have occurred the last quarter of this year, and likewise, it will be a walkthrough of the actual mining deaths and a quick update on the best practice to prevent those. There's more details on our website than what we have today, but these are tools that you'll be able to use in your training rooms to really walk through with the miners that come through your doors to let them know really what hazards miners have faced and what has claimed their lives that we think is a very important material. Then there's going to be a PowerPoint on a presentation that Jeff Duncan, the director of EP&D, is going to provide. It's going to address task training, examinations, and adult learning, a new program that I know EP&D is excited about that was piloted during the most recent CRAM conference that had a lot of good comments, and we want to share that with you as well today. We're also going to save some time at the very end of the presentation to have questions and answers from the participants as well as comments. And again, you know, we were are asking those in the training community to tell us what you need, what you think we can do to make things better for you as far as the training that you provide, and to have a dialogue back and forth. And always there is our email that you can send comments or questions to, askemsha@dol.gov. And I know a lot of you use that already to hook into the training sessions, particularly the one that we're having today. So a couple items before I turn the program over to Jeff Duncan I'd like to talk about. The first is our new field organizational structure in EP&D, and our field services, now known as the Educational Field and Small Mines Service Division. As many of you know, we combine our small mines staff and our EFS field staff into a single unit, with the staff carrying out, our field staff carrying out both objectives, both the small mines objectives and our field service objectives. We cross-train the staff. We actually merged them all into a single unit on June the 29th. And so that is now the official field services that we have in EP&D. One of the things that I asked Jeff to do was to have all of our field staff start meeting with all the stakeholders throughout the country. That is mining associations, like the agri associations, labor organizations, state agencies, the different groups out there that we have and should have a normal working relationship with. And what we've asked them to do is to let everybody know the services that we provide and to get feedback about how we could do things better. And also, we're soliciting help from the stakeholders throughout the mining community. And one particular area that we're asking for help is in the area of small mines. We're looking to expand our resource capabilities to help those that we think need the help the most in the mining industry, and that is these smaller mines that don't have the safety departments, the training departments that the larger operators and companies do. So as our folks meet with you, for those who may be on the phone that are part of mining associations, organizations, we encourage you to have those conversations with our staff. And at the end of the day, I think that it'll make us a better agency, we'll provide better services to the mining community, and it's going to provide everyone an opportunity to know basically what we're doing and why, and of course, help us do a better job as we carry out those services. The second thing I'd like to talk to you about today is a new initiative that we are launching, and I've talked about this at a few of the stakeholder meetings I've had out in the field, and that is this plan that we have launched to overhaul our website. There's two versions of this. One is we're looking to retool the website to make it more worker-friendly, so stakeholders, those in the public, can more easily find the vast information that we have. But most importantly for our training folks, we're creating a new page. It's going live today. It's the first phase of that. And if you look at, again, on our website, under What's New, in that top left portion, the second bullet down, you're going to find this link to a new training page. This is going to become our single source training page that we are just beginning to populate as we speak today with all the training materials, training connected issues that is scattered throughout our website. If you click on that link and then that will open up a link that's going to be identified as the IMCHA Training Center. That page is where we're beginning to populate the new material or the existing material that we have on our website. And I said new because there is a component of that. As we populate the existing information, we're going to be working with the mining community to collect good training programs and materials that you have out there that we're going to be adding to this over time through a process of which everyone knows we have to make sure that it complies with all the government rules and procedures. But we're going to be asking those in the mining community to share with us the great training material that you all have developed to be added to this. So if you go to that IMCHA Training Center page, and if you look down at the bottom left portion, you'll see different links as well. And one of them is in the second group, the second bullet down, identified as training videos. if you click on that link, that's going to take you to training videos that we have currently amassed as part of the single source page that we are developing. And when you click on that page, you're going to see a list of different videos that are available to trainers to use in training classrooms. We try to make it as easily accessible as we can. And just keep in mind, this is day one of this program, and over the next weeks and months, we're going to be working to continue to populate this particular website so we can provide to the nation's trainers a single source page that you can go to find the different kind of training materials and needs that you have. Ideas about what may be added to this particular single source page, we'd like to hear back from folks in the mining community to let us know a different kind of information or different ways to identify the training material that would be more helpful to you. So this is part of our new exciting venture as we move forward, and I think at the end of the day, when we get this program up and running, fully populated, and we begin adding training material from the general mining community, this is going to be probably one of the most beneficial single actions I think we can take to help those who train up our nation's miners. Again, I want to thank you all for joining us today. We have some material that we think is going to be very valuable for those to use in the training rooms to train up our miners. And I now want to turn the program over to Jeff Duncan, who will moderate the program for the rest of the session today. Jeff?
Thank you, Assistant Secretary Main. Hello, everyone. And thank you for taking the time to participate in our Trainer Summit today. Our first presentation is going to be on the metal, non-metal fatalities, and Mike Hancher, Chief of Accident Investigations, will provide the overview.
Give everybody a little time to find the first slide. You should be looking at MSHA Training Summit, Metal, Non-Metal, Third Quarter. So if everybody's on that page, you can go to the next page, and you'll see that we have our fatalities listed by state, commodity, and whether it occurred at a surface mine or an underground mine. And through the third quarter of 2014, we've had 19 fatalities in metal and non-metal. They're listed by states, and as you can see, there's 14 states where these accidents occurred, which is really about a third of the country when you break it down state by state. So it's pretty vast and pretty spread across the country. Of these 19 fatals, 14 occurred at surface mines and 5 occurred at underground mines. And I might note that one of the fatals at the underground mine occurred on the surface of the underground mine. To break them down by classifications, 4 involve pyrite haulage, which is consistent. Every year, pyrite haulage is the lead leader in metal, non-metal. 4 were fall of persons. 3 were falling material. 3 machinery. 1 accident was a double fatal with a fall of rib. 1 was electrical. And 1 was hoisting, and 1 was an explosion of gas. So that was the 19 fatals for the year through the third quarter. On the next slide, which is the third quarter specifically, we had 5 fatals in metal and non-metal. 1 occurred in South Carolina, 1 in Florida, 1 in Montana, 1 in New York, and 1 in Texas. We'll go through a couple more slides, and then I'll speak of these more specifically. The next slide shows the commodities for metal, non-metal, and they've been spread out over 10 different commodities of these 19 fatals. So the largest sector was sand and gravel with 7, which is not surprising because it makes up the largest portion of metal and non-metals activity. 2 at a cement plants, 2 at lime, 2 at limestone, 1 at iron ore mine, 1 fire clay, 1 gold, 1 gypsum, one silver and one salt. So these fatalities were spread all over, not just in one sector. Next slide. The next slide was the first fatality in the third quarter. It occurred in the mid-July. And it's kind of odd, an odd fatality when you look at it, because you think, you know, what kind of mining is going on here? It was a dredge operation. The assistant plant manager took a metal boat out and was actually going out to pull slack so they could advance the dredge. And lo and behold, a sharp piece of metal on the bottom of the boat caught a fire conductor, and the victim got out of the water and was electrocuted. So this is a very different type of fatal, but when you look at the best practices and you think, you know, how could this accident be prevented? Well, first of all, you're going to be moving cable. You should lock and tag out and disconnect. Next slide. You can see there's a loading facility. A truck came in, an over-the-road truck came in with some material, and the victim was actually preparing to untarp the truck. And the front-end loader that you can see that hit the truck was backing down the hill and backed into the victim. And you go to the next slide for best practices. Probably the most important thing is to maintain communications and be aware of the persons that are in the area. The next slide occurred in Montana, and the victim was a plant operator, and he was working on a dump truck. And he was working by himself, but he was working on a Saturday, and he raised the bed of the truck and blocked it with a piece of wood. However, as he worked on the truck, the piece of wood snapped, and the victim was killed. And he wasn't really found until the next day. He was working by himself, and he was located the next day. A best practice that could be used to prevent this reoccurrence was to properly block the machinery. Next slide. This accident occurred in late August in New York, and the miners were working on a crusher, and they needed some wood. So the victim said, "I know where the wood is. I'll go get it for blocking." So he climbs up on these two pallets. You can see the two wood or the two boxes of pallets, and he goes to the top and he picks up a couple pieces of planks. And you can see those wooden planks on the right side. So he takes the third plank down and falls. But I think the unique part of this fatality is that he was working with other miners, but no one checked on him at the end of the shift. And he wasn't found until the next day. Miners came to work and they saw that his motorcycle was still at the mine. So they started looking for him and found him, but he fell off those boxes and died. Ways to prevent a reoccurrence for this accident would be to maintain safe access. That's the big main best practice that would have prevented this accident from occurring. The next... Death occurred at a salt mine in Texas, on the surface of a salt mine in Texas. The forklift wouldn't move. The forklift shown in this fatal ground wouldn't move. So the mechanic went and checked on it, and he got it to move. He got it to move about 80 feet. However, the machine stopped again. So he was doing some work on it, and the machine jumped. And you can see the wooden post on the left. It's yellow on the bottom. He was pinned actually between that yellow post and a post for the falling object protective structure on the vehicle. So the one of the probably the best practices to prevent a reoccurrence for this accident would be to conduct pre-operational checks, identify the defect, and then make sure the power's off the machine and work on it in a safe place, because you can just see how things happen in the wrong way. So those are the five fatals that we've had in the fourth quarter. And I'd just like to say that we're getting down to the wire as far as the year goes. We've had above average fatals in metal non-metal this year, but we have 7 weeks left. And I know this is a particularly a tough time of the year around the mines. Everybody's easily distracted with the holidays coming on and hunting seasons. So it's important that miners keep their minds on their job and are not easily distracted. And I'd like to also mention that in metal, non-metal, if most of these fatals could have been prevented, a majority of these fatals could have been prevented, I should say, if proper examinations were conducted and good examinations conducted at the beginning of the shift. With that, and also excellent training, particularly task training, if those two best practices would be implemented, it would go a long way in reducing fatals in metal and non-metal.
Thank you, Mike. Our next presentation is on the coal fatalities, and our presenter is Terry Bentley, a special assistant in Coal Mine Safety and Health. And just to make sure that everyone is able to access the slide presentation, they're available through the MSHA.gov site or the MSHA.gov/training site. Terry?
Thank you, Jeff. Good afternoon, everyone. If you're looking at the coal fatal presentation, you see the first page, and I'm going to move to the second slide, which lists the coal fatalities beginning with the first of the year through the end of the third quarter. There were 11 fatalities. That covered 8 states. There were 8 of those underground fatalities, and 3 of those were surface fatalities. In particular, I'd like to point out that 5 of these fatalities were machinery-related, and 3 of these fatalities were powered haulage related. 3 of these were in West Virginia and 2 of these were in Virginia. The powered haulage and machinery accidents frequently are a struck by a type of an accident. Powered haulage is a little bit broader category, but very frequently we see these are some sort of a struck by a type of an accident. We'll move to the next slide, please. Slide 3, and we are showing, I want to discuss a little bit about the 3 coal fatalities that occurred in the third quarter of 2014. And I would also like to note that at this point in time, through the third quarter, as well as where we are currently, this is the lowest number of fatalities compared to this time from previous years that coal has experienced. For the 3 coal fatalities, there was 1 in Virginia, 1 in Alabama, and 1 in Utah. Two were underground and one was surface. One involved a maintenance supervisor, one involved a bulldozer operator, and one involved a mobile equipment operator. So now I'll move to the fourth slide, if you're following along. And the first fatality that Cole experienced in the third quarter was in Virginia. It was an electrical fatality. The 41-year-old maintenance supervisor with about 19 years of mining experience was killed when he came in contact with the energized components inside of a roof bolting machine enclosure. The voltage was 600 volts AC, and we're not quite sure whether he was performing electrical work or troubleshooting. We do know initially that the individual had removed the panel to troubleshoot. So if you look at the next page, that's slide five, some of the best practices, first and foremost, remember that electrical work is the work required to install or maintain electrical equipment or conductors, and troubleshooting is the testing, the work of testing or locating electrical problems and verifying that proper repairs have been made. And then certainly, as always, never rely on others to perform lock and tag activity. Always do this yourself. Next slide, which is slide six. The second fatality within the third quarter was on Monday, September the 15th. And a 53-year-old bulldozer operator with about 28 years of experience was killed when his bulldozer over-travel edge of about a 50-foot high wall. We do know that he was preparing a bench for drilling when the accident occurred, some sort of a drill pad. So if you move to the next slide, the best practices for this accident. In particular, I would point out that the equipment operator should be familiar with the work environment. And before beginning work, walk around and check the area and plan for the safest way to move the material and maneuver the equipment. And also, they should be very attentive to changes in the ground conditions, such as loose material. We move to the eighth slide. This is the third fatality in the third quarter that Cole experienced. This occurred in Utah. If you're looking at the picture, this was an underground fatality. It was powered haulage. The picture shows the piece of equipment after it was brought to the surface. And on September the 16th, a mobile equipment operator with about 10 years mining experience was killed while he was operating this mobile diesel can setter. It's kind of like a large LHD load haul dump type of machine or a big scoop. The victim was stockpiling pallets to prepare for the extraction of the long wall when he was crushed within the articulation area of the can setter itself. So if you move to the ninth page, the best practices, first and foremost, never work or travel in the articulation area of equipment without engaging the steering frame lock or without using another effective means of preventing motion if the lock cannot be used. And do not position yourself in pinch port areas while equipment is running. Ensure that the equipment operator remains in the confines of the equipment cab while the machine is running. That's the three fatalities within the third quarter that Cole had to discuss. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Terry. And I might mention that the slides that both Mike and Terry used are our Fatalgram slides, and they're easily accessible now on our new EFSHA training page. I know a lot of the trainers that I've talked to across the country use these slides as part of their training. It's my turn now, so I'll start my presentation. If you'll go to the PowerPoint titled EFSHA Training Summit. And I'd briefly like to talk about something that Assistant Secretary Main mentioned, and that's the reorganization of our former Educational Field Services and Small Mines Consultation Program into a single cohesive organization
that we now refer to as Educational Field and Small Mine Services, or EFSMS. We started the reorganization process back in the spring and made it effective on June 29th. We've actually held a couple of cross-training sessions with the staff at the academy now, and the integrated program is resulting in a better coordination of our resources, and it's making services more accessible to the mining industry. We've actually been able to begin to see reduced travel costs as we eliminate duplication. One of the things that we found in the old arrangement where we had two programs was that we oftentimes had educational field services staff driving past the location of a small mine staff person to get to a mine and vice versa. Now we're able to use all of our staff no matter what the size of the mine. And it's making us more responsive to the needs of the industry. Our idea is to continue the best parts of both of those programs and result a single comprehensive program that does provide services to all mines, regardless of size. It is noteworthy that of the 14,000 mines that we have in our nation, approximately half are small mines. And beginning this year, we'll be working very hard to increase our visits to those small mines. The fact that our presence has increased from 18 states where we formerly had small mine staff located to 35 states, we believe we're going to be able to deliver a little bit better to the industry. And we're working to refine our targeting efforts to ensure that we're providing the correct services to the mines that have the greatest need. So from helping develop improved safety and health training, safety, health, and training programs for mine operators, to assisting the districts with training plan approvals, the organization is going to enrich the mining community through improved services. The slide that you're viewing outlines many of the services that are available. Through EFSMS. This site is accessible through the MSHA training page and also the MSHA homepage. It includes contact information for our EFSMS team. Next slide, please. During the last summit back in August, we talked about the importance of providing effective task training and conducting thorough workplace examinations. If you were able to review the best practices in several of the fatalities that were just covered, you saw task training as one of the best practices identified in many of those accidents. But after the last summit, we received questions regarding both of those topics. As a matter of fact, one trainer from Minnesota submitted a question, the read in part, "I just participated in the quarterly summit call and had questions regarding the available training. I was told there's workplace examination and task training available. Could you please provide me with that?" We responded to this particular question and also followed up by having one of our EFSMS specialists contact a trainer and provide material and assistance. You know, it was a great question, and it was from a sincere trainer that wanted to improve safety and health for the miners at their operation. We had similar questions to that one from trainers during our TRAM conference back in October. So I thought it was worthy of spending some time discussing task training again today. You know, as I mentioned during the last summit, while all training is important, task training is probably the most important training that a miner receives. I encourage you all to make an investment in task training and make it as effective as possible. Ensure that you have an adequate task training program for all machines, job duties, maintenance activities, and any time there's a change
in the equipment, process, or conditions at the mine. Make sure your task training records are complete and that they're correct, and review them to make sure that miners' task training is up to date. Next slide, please. You need to assess all tasks. You need to maintain a task list in your training plan. It's always helpful just to be able to go back in and identify tasks that that you're going to provide training on. And you need to use the use things like checklists, JSAs, and operators' manuals to assist you in the assessment of tasks. Make certain to prepare a training action plan to address changes in equipment, process, and conditions at a mine. One of the things we've noticed in fatalities recently is changing conditions. Ice and snow, slippery conditions have resulted in serious accidents, sometimes fatal accidents. And, you know, you need to go back and review the task training to make sure that it addresses changes in conditions. Next slide, please. Make sure your training is thorough and results in a miner with adequate safety skills to perform the task. Time is important. Make sure that you allow enough time to complete thorough task training. And remember, not everyone learns the same way or at the same pace. The training must be provided for in both non-production and supervised production practice. And you need to cover everything, including pre- and post-operational checks, service requirements, reporting problems and malfunctions, out-of-service criteria, and, once again, changes in equipment, process, or conditions at the mine. Next slide, please. Of equal importance is preparation of the trainer. You need to ask yourself, has your task trainer received any training, formal or informal? Can they communicate effectively? Can they connect with miners? Do they have adequate knowledge of the subject matter? All these things are important. Task training should follow an outline or a checklist to make sure nothing gets missed. And you must evaluate the effectiveness of the training. And I also recommend that you conduct follow-up evaluations. One of the most effective task training programs I've ever seen was actually at a large surface mine in the West, and for haul truck operators, they had a four-week program. And at the end of the four-week program, they evaluated whether the operator was adequately trained. And if he was or she was, they were permitted to operate the equipment. But there was always follow-up. And the instructors would actually go out and, you know, they would sit along the job and observe how these folks were operating the equipment. And if they saw something that that they didn't like, they pulled that operator off the line and actually provide a remedial training. So follow-up evaluations are important. Next slide, please. The other subject, and I'm going to try and get through this one very quickly as well, so we do have time for questions and answers, is on workplace examinations. We talked the last time about how important thorough and complete workplace examinations are. And, you know, it's not a burden. It's something that's going to help mine operators identify hazardous conditions and get them corrected before they result in an injury, an accident, or even downtime. These have to be conducted by competent persons. I'll tell you that we do have, and this is for metal, non-metal, excuse me, competent persons in metal and non-metal. We do have available on our training page a workplace examinations training program for metal, non-metal, for competent persons. And we also have one available, and it's a rather large program for examiners in coal mines. You can use those programs
We'd be happy to have our educational field services, our educational field and small mine services staff come out and assist you and provide the training. But either way, that information is available. Next slide. That's a sample record that that you can use in your workplace examinations. We just wanted to make that available to you so you know, you understand how a checklist should look. Next slide. The last thing I'd like to talk about is something new that we've done. Our distance learning group at the National Mine Academy has developed our first course to address adult learning principles. It is available. The course highlights the differences between training traditional students and training adults, and it offers some ways that trainers can develop training materials to better reach an adult audience. So that's also available now on our training page. We intend to add additional courses. Next up will be in, an intermediate course for adult learning principles. And so you can look forward to that and keep your eye on our training page. Okay. What I'd like to do now is go to the questions and answers. But before we do, I'd like to just share with you some of the questions that have come into our MSHA training page. The first one says, the first one reads, do you guys offer training for trainers at the academy for the public? I'm interested in becoming a better trainer for my company. We work in the metal, non-metal industry. And the answer to that question is yes. We do offer train-to-trainer courses at the National Mine Academy. Those courses are also available through educational field our educational field and small mine services. So you can contact either the Mine Academy or EFSMS, and we'd be happy to assist you with that. The second question is, I suggest that you try to keep the website up to date. I do use the MSHA site a lot, trying to get the miners coming from my coming through my classes to go to the site and find subjects. I use iPads. I give to the members and challenge them to find items on the website. Well, thank you for that question. And MSHA is embarking on a major website modernization project that will improve our search function and the organization of the materials on the site. I hope that helps you in your training. The last question I'd like to share is, I'm interested in ideas for new miner and annual refresher training for contacting employees at the mine, contracting employees, excuse me, at the mine with specific job requirements not related to the mining cycle. Our new training page will make that easier as well. You'll be able to find ideas for training courses, and we'll be putting all related MSHA training materials in one place. We will be adding this page over time, and we're hoping that, that we can get input from all those trainers out there and actually include some of your ideas on our training page. So with that, Emily, if you could open up the phone lines, we'll take some questions.
Thank you, sir. At this time, anyone wishing to ask a question or make a comment, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Please be sure that your telephone is unmuted and clearly record your name when prompted so your question may be introduced. Once again, anyone wishing to ask a question or make a comment, please press star 1 at this time. One moment, please, for the first question. And sir, our first question today comes from Corey Bloom.
Hi, my question is, I understand what we did at the last summit, and I understand the purpose of the review and going forward for this summit, but what I'm still not clear about, so please help. I think I have a reasonable level of training, having done this for many years, I was looking for training materials, and the website, I was told, was going to be updated with respect to when I go to the video link or other training materials link, there is so much information there. The newer items need to be starred in some manner as to prevent me from having to spend hours to sift through for a silver bullet. I will be doing some training in the next few months. It would be really good to know where the new materials are since last winter, so that I can refresh my training with respect to making it invigorating and motivating to the people I train. Thank you.
If I could take the first part of that, this is Joe Maine, and I'm going to turn it back over to Jeff for the closing on it. So what you have spotted is what we have spotted as well. We have some of the most fantastic information, but it's hard to find. And the mission that we have launched is really developing a single-source training page where, as we are able to identify and organize and tag all the different programs to be found on a single-source approach. So that's coming at you piece by piece. We just launched the first page of that today. And I heard what you had to say about looking at how we could tag the newer stuff. That's been well noted as we redesign our system. I think that we can probably figure out how to do that by identifying the newer material. Jeff, you want to take it from there?
Yeah, and thank you for your question, Corey, and you make a great point. As Joe said, we sometimes struggle ourselves to find things on our website. We have some people working very hard to correct that. One thing we can help with is if you want to contact someone from EFSMS or the National Mine Academy, they'll direct you to the newest material that we have available.
Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Paul Kennedy.
Good afternoon. First of all, thank you very much for offering this networking opportunity for the trainers across the country. My question is, previously there was some discussion about an opportunity for a 5023 for trainers to be used that could be typed and duplicated as compared to sitting and writing by the books. Was there any movement on that specifically for the Part 48 compliance? Thank you.
Paul, thank you for that question. Currently, we're kind of stuck with the existing 5023. Many operators, however, have submitted to my office requests for approval of an alternate 5023. We do process those requests, and provided that it's an equal form to our existing 5023, we can approve it. So if you want to contact my office, please call 202-693-9570 and ask for Kevin Burns or Cheryl Harris. We'd be happy to discuss that with you.
So, Jeff, and I'm just going to plug in here. This is Joe. Is this an OMB form we have?
Yes.
Okay. So let's put that on our register if it's an easier system for people to use electronically as opposed to, and I can tell you this, that one of the things I've learned since I come to government is that getting these forms done is no easy task, but let's put that one on the list if that's something that helps folks to electronically do it and see if we can't usher it through.
Yeah, and if I might mention on the form 5023, we get a lot of questions right around now because the form has an expiration date. We wish it didn't, but OMB requires it. And sometimes the process to get the new form approved takes an extended period of time. We do have the form, the same form, in there for approval with a new date. You can continue to use the existing forms. They're not changing. Even if they have an expiration date that's already passed. And on the website, there is a form that's available, and that expiration date is updated kind of month by month till we get the OMB approval. So don't panic if your 5023 says that, that it expired back in July. It's still good. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Chip Late.
Yes, thank you very much. I appreciate all these calls. They've been very helpful. My question is, are you working on any specific products, DVDs, videos, for the real small miners, the ones that have the single-deck screens and the rubber-tired backhoes that they really need this kind of assistance? Thank you.
I'm not aware of any work specific to the types of equipment you're speaking of. I am very interested in ideas on training material that we can develop to address the needs of the mining industry. So we'll make note of that. If you have an opportunity, you might want to give me a call and we could talk about it a little bit more and I could get some more of your ideas. You can reach me at 202-693-9572. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Todd Larson.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thank you. I am looking for clarification for the term equivalent experience as it relates to Part 46 training for independent contractors, dealing specifically with builders working at a mine site. If they have many years as a carpenter with the 24-hour training, are they then considered experienced miners? Thank you.
Yeah. That's a great question, and it's one that has a lot of nuances. If we could, perhaps you could contact Eric Johnson, our acting manager of Educational Field Services, and he could discuss it and walk through all the nuances with you. Eric can be reached at 303-231-5438.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And, operator, for the convenience of folks on the call, if they want to provide the question in the email, again, we have the website or our email address, rather, of askimpsha@dol.gov. And that may be more helpful for providing information flow back and forth as well. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Our next question comes from Michael Putney.
Hello. I'm also work for a contractor. We're an electrical contractor. We work for a lot of different surface, actually sand mines, and a lot of it is building new facilities that's covered under MSHA. And occasionally we'll hire a new person from the union hall, or we'll move some of our people around when we need additional people. We have a refresher course every year. We have an 8-hour day we just set aside. We bring in everyone. But some of our people generally only work on an OSHA site. So what are our requirements if we move them for a few days or move them from an OSHA site to an MSHA site? Can I do that? If they haven't had our refresher, they are experienced electricians, so they're not doing a different job. They're just going to a different jurisdiction, if you will.
Right. Thank you for that question. It's a great question, and it's one that we receive often. Once again, though, it is kind of filled with nuances, and so it's probably one that we would need to discuss kind of one-on-one, or if you want to submit it via the website, we'd be happy to answer it. But, there's things issues about how often they're going to be there, what they're going to be exposed to, and those kind of issues that that we would really need to know before we could give you a good answers. So, you know, once again, if you want to contact us, you know, we'd be happy to answer it for you.
Operator, we have time, I think, for one last question.
Thank you, sir. And that question comes from Brian Page.
Yes, thank you for taking my question. We're very much interested in improving the quality of our trainers, and we believe one of the things that would help us would be copies of the evaluations, training evaluations that MSHA does. We think it would help us identify our strengths and our weaknesses so we know where to apply our efforts. But when we've asked for these copies of the evaluations, we've been denied them. Is there any other way we could get them?
Yes, I think I can take care of that for you. I'm not aware of us denying to provide the evaluations to the instructors. I hope our folks are talking to you about what they found, but I will correct that if that's a problem.
Thank you.
Operator, I'd like to take an opportunity here as we close to thank everyone for joining us today. This is an ongoing dialogue we plan to cement in place. For the next quarterly session we'll have, will be somewhere in January. If there's ideas that folks who are on the call have, the things they'd like to have us do some presentations on during that call, please let us know. We plan to have a review of all the mining desks for the prior quarter on all these calls, so that's something that we have stationary. But if there's particular things that folks would like for us to spend some time on, please let us know. Also, please send an email if there's questions you have for those that didn't have an opportunity to ask those on the call. And as I had said in the beginning, we are in the very first phases of our reforming our training material on our website. The page that we have up today is day one. Our folks are going to be working on both reorganizing the data that we have, or the information we have on the website, tagging it to be more accessible for quick access by our training community, and we will be looking toward populating that with other training programs that others have in the mining industry that would be very helpful or useful, and we're going to have here shortly a vehicle put in place for us to receive that for the reviews that has to go through to vet it to make sure that it meets whatever federal standards. So with that, on behalf of EP&D, Metal & Metal, Cole, and the entire staff here at MSHA, we want to thank you for joining us today, and hopefully this is a helpful venture for all. Thank you very much.
This does conclude today's conference. Thank you so much for joining. You may disconnect at this time.